Hey, football fans, are you obsessed with the game?
Oh, yeah.
Do you find yourself looking for breakdowns from every angle? For those who can't get enough, subscribe to Brian Baldinger's podcast, The Best Football Show, where he discusses the top teams and players from around the league each week.
That's what I watched this week, a dominant performance.
New episodes drop every weekday, including Trench Talk Tuesdays with former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth. Make sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
If those hostages aren't back, I don't want to hurt your negotiation. If they're not back by the time I get into office, all hell will break out in the Middle East.
You probably recognize the voice that was President-elect Donald Trump talking about the ongoing conflict in Gaza. And obviously yesterday, a ceasefire deal was reached between Hamas and Israel. Now there is a delay. Israel has said that they're not going to vote on the deal right now. We're following hour by hour. They've said Hamas has gone back on some of the items that were agreed upon. And just to give us some more information on where we stand right now is Robert Berger, CBS correspondent, currently in Jerusalem. Robert, thank you for joining us today.
Good to be with you.
I guess my first question should be, where are we in this delay on the vote on the ceasefire deal?
Well, I can give you breaking news that disagreements between Israel and Hamas have been resolved. And according to Israeli media, the Israeli cabinet will meet tomorrow to approve the deal, which is widely expected, and then putting basically the deal in motion, hopefully maybe see the release of three female Israeli hostages as early as Sunday.
So what can you give us what the exact details are of this deal and what both sides will be getting?
Sure. This is a three-phase deal, and the only thing that's been agreed to is phase one, which would see the release of 33 Israeli hostages, females and men over the age of 50, as well as some people considered humanitarian cases. In other words, they're ill. That would be the 33. And by the way, not all of them are alive. It's actually unknown how many of the 33 are alive. It's assumed that maybe two-thirds are. So that's phase one. Then in a couple of weeks, Israel and Hamas are supposed to begin negotiations on phase two, which would hopefully see the release of the remaining 65 Israeli hostages held in Gaza and an end to the war. And then phase three would be the reconstruction of Gaza. Those last two phases have to be negotiated.
Is this the math here as well that Israel has to release 30 prisoners for every kidnapped civilian and 50 prisoners for every kidnapped female soldier? Is that how the math is working out?
Yeah, I mean, that's the basic ratio. It's expected that Israel is going to release 1,000 Palestinian prisoners during this six-week ceasefire. And typical lopsided deal, 1,000 in exchange for 33, of which 250 of the people that will be released from prison, Palestinians, are serving life sentences for killing Israelis in terrorist attacks.
Yeah, I think that was something when we start talking about this ceasefire, why it's complicated, why it's difficult. There are so many layers to it. But the release, you know, Hamas is releasing hostages like babies and little kids, and Israel has to release terrorists. It's one of those hard to comprehend lopsided deals.
Yeah, this isn't the first time, of course. People in Israel, it's a painful price for Israel to pay, and this is only phase one. In phase two, you'll probably see the release of at least 2,000 more Palestinian prisoners, and you know, most of them have been convicted of terrorism charges, including murder. But that's basically the price Israel has paid over the years. This was a catastrophic intelligence failure on October 7th that allowed 3,000 or more Hamas gunmen to, you know, swarm into Israel and kill people, 1,200 people, and kidnap over 250. Now, in a previous deal, about 100 or more were released. But so the feeling is that you have to pay the price to get them home, even though it's a heavy price.
What is public sentiment there? Are they just happy it's getting done, or are they upset with the terms?
Yeah, you know, it's a little bit of both. Of course, people want to see the hostages released. Everybody, this has been hanging over the country since October 7th, 2023. Every day on the news, you see families of the hostages, every news broadcast, just hanging over the country. So to see them start to come out is, of course, welcome. But to see these other militants or terrorists, you know, coming out back onto the streets, obviously doesn't, you know, increase the sense of security among Israelis.
Right, because again, as you said, it's a three-stage process. It would be 6 weeks of ceasefire, and this is just the first stage. I know there has been discussion what happens to Gaza after this conflict. Is the current conflict is over, but I can't imagine how you plan that when you have Hamas leaders saying we're going to do October 7th over and over again. We're going to do this. We're celebrating it. How do you approach that?
One of the goals of the war was to destroy Hamas, and that's why the Israeli government, which is a right-wing government, I mean, this is a reluctant deal, to say the least. The price, they didn't succeed in the main goal of the war, which is destroying Hamas. Now, there's a possibility if Hamas doesn't release the hostages after 6 weeks, the remaining hostages, if there's no deal, that Israel would go back to war. That's going to be hard to do under President Trump, though, who has famously said that there will be all hell to pay unless there's a deal.
What do we know about the American hostages that are left?
Yeah, seven American hostages, of whom only three are believed to be alive. And maybe one of them will come out in the first phase, Keith Siegel, 64 years old. So he would fit into the category of over 50 and maybe come out in this first phase. The other two that are alive are of military age. One of them is actually an Israeli soldier and the other one of military age. So if they won't be coming out for a while. And then there's four who are believed to be dead.
You know, you mentioned the incoming president, Trump, who was part of this. You know, he had a representative who was working on this deal, and that was sanctioned by the Biden administration. So you've got this cooperation that typically doesn't happen between an outgoing administration and an incoming one. Just how unique of a situation is that?
Well, I think it had to be done because even though President Trump said, you know, get this done before I come in, he's going to have to deal with the implementation of it, whether he likes it or not. And we can only hope that it goes smoothly, but typically it doesn't always go that smoothly. And then, like I mentioned, there's a second phase of the deal. All that's going to happen under President Trump's watch. It was good that he brought Steve Witkoff, the negotiator, the Middle East negotiator, in. From what I've heard, he brought in a very tough message to both Israel and Qatar, which is an Arab mediator with Hamas, saying, look, President Trump wants to get this deal done, and you better do it. So I think that scared Netanyahu, and maybe the negotiators from Qatar also. And they got the deal.
With the breaking news that you said that Israel has agreed now to the ceasefire, are we talking hours or days when we will see the hostages cross into Israel?
So, yes. The cabinet should approve this tomorrow, which would set a 48-hour process in motion. And the hope is that the first three hostages will come out on Sunday. Now, then they're going to be released in small batches every week. So, and then in the next batch in a week, you expect three or four to come out and so on through the 42 days. And then Israel will also, with each hostage release, free probably 150 or so Palestinian prisoners each time.
Yeah, it's interesting with the public sentiment, as you mentioned, really inconceivably difficult because you're talking about human life and these hostages needing them home. Also exchanging terrorists back into Gaza, back to Hamas. And I know in people's minds is the 2011 when Yahya Sinwar, who was the leader of Hamas, right, the mastermind behind October 7th, was released as part of that exchange where over 1,000 prisoners were released for one Israeli soldier. And for him to come back years later, help mastermind October 7th is very, very raw.
Yeah, that's right. People talk a lot about that deal back in 2011, 1,027 soldiers, Palestinian prisoners for one Israeli soldier. And as you mentioned, Sinwar was one of them. And there's a fear that they're releasing a lot of top militants who will try and do the same thing. Certainly, it's a dilemma, but Israel's ethos is you bring them home and at any price. But are people happy about it? No.
CBS correspondent Robert Berger from Jerusalem with us. We appreciate your time, Robert. Thank you.
Yeah, good to be with you. Thanks.
That is Robert Berger, again, with CBS News, joining us here on the Chris and Amy Show. You know how we are, the incoming president wants to take Canada? Oh. Well, the state of Indiana wants to take downstate Illinois. They want to assume Illinois.
So Indiana, if you drew the line, would look a little weird because that little toe of Indiana would go bloop.
Yeah.
I'm for it. A good old secession.
Do you want downstate Illinois to join Indiana? Well, there's a proposal out there for it. We'll tell you about it next on KMOX.
Well, it's a stunt. It's not going to happen. But I'll just say that that Indiana is a low-wage state that doesn't protect workers, a state that does not provide health care for people when they're in need. And so I don't think that it's very attractive for anybody in Illinois. Where wages are higher, where the standard of living is higher, and where we do provide health care for people who are in need.
Whoa, we didn't have to do Indiana like that.
Oh, Indiana sucks.
What? It's beautiful.
Fine. There's a lot of places are beautiful, but the states still suck.
Indianapolis is doing a lot better than we are.
It's fine. I've been there. It's fine. Indiana sucks.
There every year. Love it.
Yeah, I've been there. It sucks.
I wish
it all sucks. Indiana sucks. And there are 33 counties in the state of Illinois that have now voted to secede from Illinois, to secede from Cook County mostly. That's what they're upset about. They don't like being associated with Chicago and everything that takes place up in the up in that area, the northern part of the state. But this is, it's all bluster. It's all ceremonial. It's all very stupid. And I kind of wish we would get away from the stupid politics stuff. I know these folks are trying to make a statement. They're trying to say, we don't like the way it is up there, so we are voting to secede. Okay, fine. It's just dumb. It's very, very dumb, especially when you take into account almost all of the money in the state comes from the Chicago area. So, yeah, go ahead, go to Indiana or become your own state. Become the 51st state if you want to. But all your revenue, all your tax dollars are coming from up north. So, cool?
I mean, personally, I think a good old-fashioned secession story is kind of fun.
Oh,
it's kind of a relief from the normal news.
Sure.
I used to, my brother's friend, he was like our adopted brother, basically, when he was, he would always be at our house, and then they moved to Texas, you know, when he was in eighth grade or something. And I always encouraged him by saying, well, Texas is big enough to secede. And he'd go, I don't want to secede. I'm like, yeah. I know, but isn't it kind of fun knowing that you can? A good old secession threat every now and then. And Texas was seceding from the Union. in my hypothetical. They're just seceding from Illinois. It's like the transfer portal. Listen, I know we committed to Illinois, but we are taking our talents to Indiana. Maybe that's what they're doing.
Indiana lawmakers, well, some of them, have proposed House Bill 1008. I don't know if they say 1008 or 1008, whatever it is.
I like 1008. 1008 is cumbersome.
All right, how about 1008? They have proposed this bill, which would allow some of those counties, and we mentioned 33 of them. And if you look at what the new map would look like,
yeah.
I can't really tell you what it looks like.
Yeah.
I can try, but it would be a lot of the counties that border Indiana and sort of like right east of us. And then
it's
those
weird.
Counties moving toward us, mm-hmm. including Madison County, which is directly across the river. And then there's like one county on an island all by itself.
Which
and then
one is
one,
that?
I don't
It's
I
way
don't
up
know,
high.
Dude. But if, can you imagine that state flag with the Indiana state flag with all of those? It would look like a congressional district is what it would look like. And then a couple of counties
actually,
that are on
like,
islands.
It would look like an archipelago is what it would look like. At least some of the floating counties.
Yeah.
It would look more like the Bahamas, maybe. I'm okay with it. Here's the problem. You know who's not cool with it? The United States Constitution.
Oh, no.
Yeah,
what does
so
it say?
Article 4 says, quote, no new state shall be formed or erected within the jurisdiction of any other state, nor any state be formed by the junction of two or more states or parts of state without the consent of the legislatures of the states concerned, as well as of the Congress. And I feel like that would be a tough sell.
That's a real problem.
I feel like it would be a tough sell. Okay, it's not impossible. There is a chance.
Mm-hmm.
You're telling me there's a chance. Here's the thing. I actually do like Indiana. Not that they're going to secede there. But I've often thought, like, okay, if I can't go to where I want to go, which would be the mountains, right? Like, I want to move to the mountains. If I had to pick a regular, I don't want to say boring, but, you know, good old-fashioned Midwestern-type state to move to, I think Indianapolis is pretty darn cool. It's such a great city. I think it's what St. Louis should be. It's what St. Louis should have been. It's a pretty state. It's Missouri adjacent. You know, I think I could manage the shift pretty easily. Again, it's not that it's my dream state. I like Indiana, though.
I suppose if I had to pick a state within a three-state radius, mm-hmm. I would consider Indiana. But Indiana sucks.
Would you move?
It's not great.
Okay.
Northwest Indiana sucks.
Fair.
Downstate Indiana sucks. There are some pretty good. I would say like there are beautiful landscapes
beautiful.
In Indiana.
Yeah.
Okay, great. I need more than that.
Well, let me ask you this. If I said, would you rather move to Indiana or would you rather move to Illinois but not Chicago, which one would you move to?
Illinois.
That's because where you're from.
Well, it's just a better state. Illinois is all around a better state. Remember how we were touting how good of a job they did plowing the streets during the snow?
Well, maybe Indiana
That's because
plowed
of Illinois.
The snow really well.
I doubt it.
What do you not like about Indiana?
It just sucks.
Is that so? Okay, so
it just sucks.
Okay, because that's here's the thing.
I've been there a lot.
I don't
know like
if you
it.
Had like real reasons. Because that's how I feel about Ohio.
I like Ohio.
See, I'm not a fan of Ohio.
I like it. I would rather go to Ohio than Indiana 15 times out of 15.
Oh, I'd go to Indiana before Ohio. I'm just not a fan of Cincinnati.
I've been to Columbus. I loved Columbus.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not feel great about Columbus. I do not like the Blue Jackets. I don't like the Cannon. I don't like the Reds.
Okay.
I don't like the Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
I just think they are a little bit of, they need to get off their high horse. I think they like to pretend they're like a cool New England state or something. They don't consider themselves the Midwest. They're kind of flirting with both. I just think they're a little high and mighty. They're a little hoity-toity, Ohio.
Ohio?
Yes! That's what blows my mind. Ohio shouldn't be hoity-toity, but they are.
I've never gotten that impression.
Arrogant.
You think Ohioans are arrogant?
100%.
No. Ohio State fans are arrogant.
Which
I'll give you that.
Almost all of Ohio.
Reds fans aren't.
That
Cleveland
guy,
Guardians fans aren't.
Who was that horrible man that kicked our Cardinals player and ended his career?
Johnny Cueto?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's when I really started to hate Ohio.
Yeah, okay, that's Ohio. He's not from Ohio.
But he represents
He just
state.
Played for the Reds
all
for
I know,
a minute.
All I know is, however you feel about Indiana, I don't get it. I think it's unreasonable, but I feel that way about Ohio, which is also unreasonable.
That's really interesting. Every time I've been to Ohio, I really enjoyed it.
I would rather live in North Dakota than Ohio. Isn't that
what?
Weird? I know.
Yeah, that's stupid.
I like North Dakota, though.
I would like to live in Montana. I feel like Montana would be.
Everyone would want to live in Montana.
Montana looks really nice.
It is expensive.
I've heard that.
My friend who moved there and lived there had to leave Montana because it got so expensive. It's very expensive. So, of course, Montana would be a dream state, but that's the mountains. That's what I'm saying. You can't move to a cool state.
Yeah.
I'm not saying Missouri's not cool.
It's not.
It's not cool. It's a
great
state.
Do you think Missouri...
state. No, I say this all the time. We're not sexy, but we have great community. It's like
okay.
A big personality. We have a great personality, I think.
Do you want to talk to Tom and Ledoux?
Sure.
Hey, Tom, what's going on?
Oh, not much. You were talking about states couldn't absorb each other. It's already happened years ago. You know, Tennessee has the both ends are kind of angular.
Yeah.
And the eastern end used to be.
So is mine.
But the eastern end of it used to be straight up and down. There was a triangle, and that was the state of Franklin.
When was that, though? Was it
God, years ago. Ben Franklin was still alive. Trying to get
Ben Franklin. Yeah.
So it was. Well, if it was before the Article 4.
Yeah.
We appreciate it.
Thanks, Tom.
Why they wrote Article 4, though. Maybe they thought, we're not doing this. And again, these ends are too pointy.
Somebody who is watching us on YouTube right now, Garland, says, I live in Ohio, in Tiffin. I don't know where Tiffin is. Well, actually, he says it's 90 miles north of Columbus. OSU fans are spoiled.
There you go.
That is true. They are spoiled rotten. If you don't, that's the only thing about Ohio I don't like is Ohio State.
Here's the thing. I'm going to move to Indiana. You move to Ohio. We'll do the show remotely and just see how things go.
I'm into it.
Let's
go.
It.
That's Amy Marks-Kors. I'm Chris Ranji. Bernie Miklas will join us. Speaking of college football, we will talk about the playoff championship, which happens on Monday. Cardinals winter warm-up is this weekend. Oh, and a programming note about winter warm-up we'll tell you about when we come back on KMOX.
As we got down near World Series time, Bing Devine, who was the Cardinals general manager at that time, asked me if I would do him and the Cardinals in general a favor. And I said I would. And he said, we'd like to inject you with hepatitis. We need to bring an infielder up. And I said, will I be able to sit on the bench? He said, yes. We'll build a plastic cubicle for you because it is an infectious disease.
That's Bob Uecker and his Hall of Fame address, who now we learned actually right before the show started today at 10 o'clock that Bob Uecker has passed away at the age of 90, long time Milwaukee Brewers broadcaster, played for the Cardinals for a couple of seasons, spent just a handful of seasons in baseball, really. I mentioned earlier, 297 games he played in the big leagues, and we lost him today at the age of 90. It is time for the Bernie Miklas Report, brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, an American Standard heating and air conditioning dealer. Bernie is with us every Tuesday and Thursday after the 11:30 news. Bernie, that's sad news we got today about Bob Uecker, who is one of the all-time great baseball personalities.
There's no doubt about it. I mean, I got to know Bob a little bit, and there were times where before he got older, where he, you know, frankly, just didn't want to be bothered too much with interviews, but he would come on my various radio shows, and I always really enjoyed talking to him. And after Red Chaney's died in particular, Uecker spent an hour with him, and he was phenomenal talking about Red. You know, but the thing of it is, and yeah, it's a sad day because he's one of those guys you just assume he's going to be there. You know, he's lasted so long, he's endured so long, he overcame a terrible crisis in terms of his heart, where he had to have open heart surgery, and he was close to checking out. And yet he endured after that. So he just kept rolling along. But so what I tend to think of, or what I want to think of, is that how many of us, all of us, no matter what line of work we're in, where we grew up, whether we're whatever gender we are, it doesn't matter. Like, how many of us can say we were able to squeeze everything, every good thing that there is to be squeezed out of our time on Earth. This guy, for a, you mentioned it, you know, he played 297 major league games and he batted 200. And from that, he became a great comedian. He was a regular on Johnny Carson as a kid. I used to watch that. I can't even tell you how many times he's won Johnny Carson. He would get Carson laughing and laughing and laughing. Bob Uecker became a star of movies. He became a star of a, he had a successful TV sitcom. He became a star in commercials. He became a terrific broadcaster, utterly beloved 100% in Milwaukee. And I don't know what else the man could have done in his 90 years. I mean, it's really, really, really wonderful.
It's
really wonderful.
Bernie, it's amazing because just outside of baseball, you mentioned the sitcom. I watched Mr. Belvedere. I loved it, you know, when I was a kid. And he has, I cannot think of another professional sports broadcaster who has a more iconic appearance in a movie than what he has. His people still quote, and maybe I've heard them a little bit too much in my life at this point, but people still quote and know exactly who it is when they quote the major league lines.
Right. You know, it's like, I don't know. I can't remember him either. I'm really about that. You know, and the famous Miller Lite commercials too. And, you know, I must be sitting in the front row, you know, all that stuff. Or whatever that was. I screwed that up too, but no. And then, you know, I always love to watch the Hall of Fame induction ceremonies. And you know, Bob Uecker gave the greatest Hall of Fame speech when he got inducted to the broadcaster side of things, because it was just vintage classic Bob Uecker. And it was just so, so funny. And he had all the other Hall of Famers laughing. And Bob Uecker, here's the thing. Here's a wonderful thing about him. He made people happy. He made people happy on so many platforms, we can't even remember them all. And he also, and I know people in our business will appreciate this, you know, Bob Uecker also treated, and I'm sure Matt Pauley can talk about this, who spent some time in Milwaukee. Bob Uecker treated all of the younger broadcasters that through the decades were by his side in the booth. He treated them like equals. He treated them like they were something special. He was an incredible mentor to those young broadcasters who were aspiring to have a career, a great career. So there's just, you know, and I can't even imagine or comprehend the amount of money, millions of dollars he's raised for charity during his time once he hit fame, and because of his huge popularity in Milwaukee, but also he had a national reach. I hate to say this, it's such a cliche. When you consider all the platforms where he became famous and became distinguished that we just talked about, I think Uecker, especially because he was a 200 hitter in the major leagues, I think Uecker truly was a one of a kind personality. I can't think of anyone like him really.
Bernie, I've just been thinking over the past couple of years and all of the Cardinal greats that we've lost relatively recently, from, you know, Mike Shannon, Whitey Herzog, Lou Brock, Bob Gibson, and other, you know, stars like Bob Uecker.
Red.
And yes, Red Shandy's. Oh my gosh, so many. And the thing is, when I grew up, when Ronge grew up, you know, these guys were still alive. So even though they were retired, they were a huge part of our lives in the sense of sports figures that were, I knew them as well, if not better than whatever current team was playing. They were always there. I knew of Bob Uecker. As we lose these names, is this the moment where it starts to shift? Not that they will ever be forgotten, but I'm wondering, like, will younger generations look at other ball players the same way we looked at Bob Gibson and Lou Brock, or will younger generations still see these guys the way we do?
It's a tough thing to answer. I'm not sure. I think that, you know, the generations change. You know, unfortunately, the baseball players that we have loved and you know, idolized for decades, all those Cardinals players you mentioned and more. I don't know that any franchise other than maybe the Yankees has ever had more illustrious stars, but the Cardinals also had illustrious stars that were a huge part of the community It wasn't that they just popped in on, you know, for old timers or whatever. I mean, they were on the scene constantly. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that made Cardinals baseball special. So I'll be honest. Oh, there will be new heroes coming down. There will be new stars. The Cardinals, you know, will have future Hall of Famers. They're going to have two in Albert Pujols and Yadier Molina. So they'll sort of, the best that they can, they'll fill that void that has been created through the passing of so many great Cardinals. But I don't know that it's even possible to replicate the power, of the love and just the presence and just the prestige of this incredible group of Cardinals Hall of Famers that were part of the St. Louis community for decades and decades and decades.
Bernie, moving to the Cardinals now, who have their winter warm-up this weekend. The Cardinals caravan starts tomorrow. So this is really that first move towards spring training and then the regular season. So we're within a month of spring training starting. Yesterday they had the international signings. All the teams announced their signings. And these are, 16, 17-year-old players who won't make their way to the big leagues for a while. But as you look at the state of the organization right now, where they are going into winter warm-up, how are you feeling about where they are?
It's a really odd time. It's the strangest offseason personally have gone through in terms of Cardinals baseball since I moved here in 1985 and since I began doing shows and writing columns here since 1989, because it's an off season where nothing has happened. At the very beginning of the off season, they made it clear that, they would not have a new contract for Paul Goldschmidt. They did not pick up the options they had for next season on Kyle Gibson and Lance Lynn. They're trying to trade Nolan Arenado, except they haven't yet. But the Cardinals haven't added any players. They haven't made any trades that would upgrade the team for 2025. They haven't signed anyone of note. Well, they haven't signed anyone to a major league contract. I'm sure they'll do some of that, but it's not going to be at a high level. And they haven't, for a team that's sort of going into a reset, I prefer to call it a soft rebuild. They haven't cashed in their assets. In other words, that's one thing they could have done, or they still can do, there's a lot of value for Eric Fetty. There's a lot of value for Ryan Helsley, because both of these guys will be free agents after next season. But they haven't done that yet either, and I don't know that they will in Helsley's case. So there's basically been no action, like nothing has happened. And I'm excited that they're getting around to doing what is overdue, long overdue, which was doing what they can to revive what had been kind of a rickety player development minor league system, where their young players weren't getting the teaching and instruction and just general preparation for the big leagues the way former Cardinals prospects of generations past used to get. And I think this is something that's really, really important to the future of the Cardinals. But as we sit here today on January the 16th, I just kind of shrug. And it's just like, well, is anything going to happen? Are you going to do anything? Are you going to get stuck with Arenado? I mean, it's just bizarre. And I guess I expected it. I mean, but maybe not to this level where, there's just been total inaction, basically.
Yeah, I heard that from multiple camps, and sometimes people that you aren't expecting to hear that criticism from, but people are waiting for something to happen. Hey, Bernie, it is the most wonderful time of the year, and we've got NFL football Saturday and Sunday. What are you expecting from this Chiefs game? As we mentioned, it's Patrick Mahomes hasn't played since Christmas Day.
I think there's two things. I think with normal, kind of normal situations, the rust factor can be bad for the team that has the rust. But Andy Reid has been so incredible. I don't have the numbers in front of me. He has a remarkable record in games that are played after his teams have been off, whether it be a bye week, whether it be a 2-week gap, whatever it may be. That's extra time for him to prepare for the opponent, and nobody does it better. You just look at Kansas City's record since Mahomes became the starter in 2018. And it's hard they seem to be getting better, much better late in the season. It's just hard for me to believe that Houston can come in and beat them. Although there was a game, a playoff game where Houston actually opened a pretty big lead over the Chiefs. I'm not saying the Chiefs are going to roll and it's going to be a rout, but I think the Chiefs are starting to find it. You know, they were starting to just sort of get the groove back. And the other thing that I think really needs to be, you know, really needs to be kind of stressed in this game in particular, Steve Spagnuolo, the great defensive coordinator, this is the first time all season he will have had his top 18 defensive players suited up, because they were really tore up by injuries this year. But now everyone's back practicing and ready to go. And from a football standpoint, he's going to have both of his starting cornerbacks that are so great on the outside. That's going to give them the opportunity to play a lot of man-to-man coverage, which means blitz, 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 blitz. And no, there's not a defensive coordinator in the league who draws up more devious blitz packages to get after the opposing team's quarterback. So I think the Chiefs are in good shape this weekend. I really do. The game that I really, really grabs my attention the most is Baltimore at Buffalo. The Ravens are a point-and-a-half favorite, and Buffalo's a hell of a team, but the Ravens have peaked at the right time. I would take them to win, not because I grew up in Baltimore and I have friends and family that love the Ravens. It's simply because Buffalo's number one weakness this season, which, by the way, the Ravens exploited big time during the regular season, Buffalo is weak at stopping the run. And the Ravens not only have a powerhouse running back in Derrick Henry, they also have the best quarterback in football who can make a defense pay with his ability to run the football. And I'm talking about Lamar Jackson.
All right, last thing, Bernie, before we let you go, we'll ask you about the national championship game, which will happen before we talk again. So Monday night, it will be Notre Dame, Ohio State for the title. And then when you're done talking about that, tell us about our good friends at Saliga.
This is a bad answer. I'm still trying to make up my mind on that game.
Oh, okay.
I think Ohio State's got more overall talent, but you know, it's interesting. Once Ohio State, they rolled in those two playoff wins over Tennessee and Oregon. And it's interesting how the Texas offense was able to score 21 points on their defense. And we did see the Ohio State offense struggle more than they had. My point is, I'm giving Notre Dame more of a chance to win this than I would have said, say, 2 weeks ago. And there's something about the Fighting Irish that, you know, you really can't quantify with statistics. There's something special about them. I'm leaning Notre Dame, but I reserve the right to change my mind because I'm always looking for information. So there you go.
We'll take that. Yeah.
You know, everybody remembers their first game in the major leagues. For me, it was in Milwaukee. And I can remember walking out on the field, and Bertie Tebbets was our manager at that time. He said, "Well, we're going to start you today. I didn't want to tell you earlier. I didn't want you to get too fired up." I said, "Look, I'm ready to go." He said, "Well, great, you're in there. And, oh, by the way, the rest of us up here wear that supporter on the inside."
He had a lot of jockstrap jokes. Bob Uecker at his Hall of Fame induction. Uecker passed away today, or at least we learned about it this morning right before the show started. It is Amy Marks Kors and Chris Ranji. We should tell you that we've been promoting that we're going to be at winter warm-up on Monday.
Just kidding.
Just kidding. Not going to happen. Yeah. So, winter warm-up starts Saturday at Ballpark Village and Busch Stadium. We were supposed to be there Monday morning.
But what happened is Bill DeWitt heard about it. He told Mo.
Yeah.
And DeWitt and Mo were like, absolutely not.
They said,
Chris and Amy.
In fact, I think Bill DeWitt's exact words were, "Oh, hell no."
That's right. He said that.
He said, "Oh, hell no."
He said,
they are coming.
"We'll take Ackerman. We love Ackerman."
So,
but help us. If you send Chris and Amy, we'll shut the whole thing down.
No,
that's
really.
What they said.
This was a management problem.
We don't want to point fingers. He might have been on a boat.
Right. We're not trying to blame anybody around here, but there was some confusion about the beginning of inauguration coverage from CBS, which we will be airing on Monday because it also happens to be January 20th, which is inauguration day. We were supposed to be on 9 to 11, but inauguration coverage starts at 10 now.
Mm.
So because of that, Tom Ackerman will be at Cardinals Nation, where the KMOX setup is, from 9 to 10. and then inauguration coverage 10 until noon.
We think ish.
It could stop. I guess it could go a little longer than 12 o'clock. We are going to be on after 12.
That's right.
So we'll start at 12 o'clock and then we'll go until 2 here on KMOX. But we will not be at Cardinals Nation any longer.
Which is okay, because I do think, the big wigs at Odyssey.
Thanks, Trump.
Yeah. No, I think the big wigs at Odyssey thought, all right, after inauguration coverage, who do we want the people to hear from first?
Us.
Chris and Amy.
Yeah.
100%.
In fact, I think we're going to be national post coverage.
Syndicated across the country.
Talking about
the snow plows.
Talking about the snow. It still hasn't been plowed.
Have you been to McPherson?
People in Arizona are like, what are they talking about?
Yeah. So we thought that would be fun. But so we are not going to be at winter warm-up, but we will be on air after the inauguration.
Right here after inauguration coverage on CBS and KMOX. Mm-hmm. A couple of text messages in regard to our conversation about Indiana trying to assume 33 counties in Illinois, because the downstaters in Illinois are just tired of being associated with Cook County. So there is an actual House bill being proposed in Indiana to take those counties. And Amy, just out of nowhere, decided that Ohio is awful.
No. In my defense, I have said this for years. You can ask my friend. He's from Ohio, and I think he's good-naturedly offended by it. But it's been going on for years. I've always hated Ohio, even more so after Johnny, the Cincinnati Reds guy.
Oh, Johnny Cueto.
Cueto, yep.
Okay. Well, Amy has a defender here. from a 636, the text message says, my stepmother is from Ohio, talks like it's London or something. I don't know what you're talking.
Said they act like so arrogant. Like
I've never
special.
Gotten it. The only people that I have thought to be arrogant are Ohio State fans.
Talks like it's London or something. That's hilarious.
And so you said Ohio sucks. Yeah. I said Indiana sucks. And a texter from 314 says Gary, Indiana, literally the worst place in the United States.
Well, that I do know, because I had a family member who lived right next to
Gary's
there.
Gary's bad.
Yeah, but everybody's
got it. They lost
a
lot of industry. I mean, it's kind of like Detroit was for a while.
Yeah, Illinois has its cities too, right? It's got its good cities and bad cities. So no, I agree. But no, it's okay. I hate Ohio. He hates Indiana. I'll live in Indianapolis. He can live in Columbus. I have a quick question about Mr. Belvedere. Because I was very young. It went off the air when I was 6. So I have memories, but they're not super specific. But I think I wasn't worried about this when I was 6, but I do wonder about it now. So George Owens, who was Bob Uecker's character, was the dad. And the dad was a sports writer, and the mom was going to law school. How did they afford a butler?
I don't remember.
Because I feel like a sports writer also paying for his wife to go to law school might not make enough. We need to ask Derek Gould if he has a butler. Or Jeremy Rutherford.
No, I don't think they have butlers.
Maybe they do.
Maybe they have a cleaning person who comes in every now and then, but a butler is different.
Right, so why did they have
a butler? I do not remember.
How they afforded the butler?
Maybe he was sentenced to be their butler.
It's a punishment.
I decree you must be my butler.